blackness. Keep on.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Everyday Lessons Now. I am Dr. Marla Luncheon, and you know we come here on Sundays to talk about things that are of interest to us and to our community. I do have my co-host with me, Taryn Jagakalanda. Hi Taryn, how are you doing today?
Hi everyone, how are you doing? Realize you all are complaining about heat, and I can't
You are below the equator, but talk to us about that heat.
No heat today. It's a lot of rain, actually. We are in a tropical, a storm watch, so it's a lot of rain.
Wow. And that's warm rain. That's hot rain.
It's very overcast, actually. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And then it's that hot rain. It's overcast. It's humid.
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah, we were like touching 90 today in New Jersey. So my goodness, today was a hot one. And it could always be worse. But yes, so I'm happy about tonight's show because it gives me an opportunity to sort of, free talk and blend, you know, a couple of ideas that Taryn and I have been kicking around. And it's important to us because this is Black Music Month. Juneteenth happened in this month, and it's also Caribbean American Heritage Month. So there are a number of things that play here, and I find like this is a great dynamic. So tonight, guys, we actually have the honor of being able to talk to Mr. Gary Hines. And if you don't know Gary Hines, he is the musical director of Sounds of Blackness. This is a job that he has had since 1971. He can talk to us about changes in music and, you know, that kind of thing. And what we want to do before he starts, we want to play a song from Sounds of Blackness. So we'll play this song first, let you guys hear it. And then it's a song coming from a 40 strong person choir that has been around since 1969. We had to just pick one. Let's go, Jerry.
Here we go, y'all. Singing a little message out to those of y'all who feel like you're struggling.
It's a simple song. Yesterday, a man said to me, said, how can you smile when your world is crumbling down? I said, in my secret, when I want to cry, I take a look around and I see that I'm getting by.
All right, so we gave you a little bit of that song coming from this group that has 3 Grammy Awards. So, Mr. Hines, welcome to Everyday Lessons Now. How are you doing?
I am blessed with all, my sister, on behalf of Sounds of Blackness. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So we want to talk a little bit today about some of the things that are affecting us. But before we get into that, tell us about your journey with the group, you know, how you got to where you are. First of all, how did you get a fantastic job like that? And then, you know, we can talk about everything else in between.
Well, my queen, in 1969 at my alma mater here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, McAllister College, they embarked, it's of course a primarily white institution of higher learning, and they embarked on a very ambitious program to conscientiously recruit students of color and primarily African-American students in the very late 60s called EEO, Expanded Educational Opportunities, and they were very successful in that effort. One of the offshoots of that is the students themselves organized a number of different activities on campus. There was a political group, BLAC, the Black Liberation Affairs Committee, which I'm happy to say still exists. There was a theater group called Black Arts Midwest, and there was this 50-voice choir called the McAllister College Black Voices under the direction of founder, native of Beaumont, Texas, Mr. Russell Knighton. Well, fast forward to January of 1971, and that's my sophomore year. And Russell approached me about assuming the directorship because he was preparing to graduate soon. I was very honored to do that because even back then they were already very excellent. And the reason the name changed from McAllister Black Voices to Sounds of Blackness was the vision God gave me was to follow in the footsteps of the great Duke Ellington. And that surprises a lot of people. Because we hear Duke's name and we think of jazz as we should. But too many people don't know that Duke wrote, recorded, and performed everything from African music to spirituals, blues, every sound of blackness, the music of the culture. And so that's where the notion comes from, to have the repertoire that represents the music throughout the African diaspora. And that's the meaning of the name Sounds of Blackness. Every sound of the black experience, African, jazz, hip hop, reggae, rock and roll, R&B. And that's our genesis.
I see. Well, I mean, I could tell you about at least two sounds that you're missing.
Yeah, he missed Calypso.
Yeah, he missed Calypso and Toto.
I can go through the whole list if you like.
and we are really interested in that because Terran is actually a soca artist. He's a broadcaster in Trinidad, but he's also a soca artist. So, you know, we kind of see the gaps as soon as you start lining them up. We're like, big gap there.
I saw he missed too.
Well, no gaps in our repertoire. that would be because all of those styles of music and many more are reflected in Sounds of Blackness repertoire. And particularly, as you pointed out, this month being a Juneteenth celebration, which, of course, we released an anthem with that title, Juneteenth Celebration.
Yes, we have that lined up, Susan.
We have that as well.
And also, of course, being Black Music Month, and we're going to do our tribute to the soul artists of the 60s and 70s later this week here in Minneapolis called Soul of the 60s. But then also with this being Caribbean Heritage Month, because my mom's side of the family is from Kingston, Jamaica. So that's near and dear to me as well. So we don't miss any of that, my brother and sister, not the first.
Well, we're very appreciative that, you know, some Caribbean music gets in. You know, we can always get some more in there, but, you know, that's fine. That's fine. What I want to talk about now, though, is how do you actually see the transition in music and the social aspect? Because I do know that Sounds of Blackness has done some social work, really. How do you look at the transition coming from starting in the 70s and so on to be where you are now, having been awarded, you know, many different awards? It's not just Grammys that you have, but do you see a deterioration in the music? Or if you don't see it as a deterioration, how do you describe where we are now based on where we've come from, like in the 70s?
Well, first of all, yes, I do see that deterioration. No other culture glorifies self-denigration and self-deprecation and misogyny like the industry encourages our artists to do. Sounds of Blackness experienced the effects of that firsthand when George Floyd was murdered 5 blocks from where we rehearse, right here in Minneapolis, and we came out with Sick and Tired of Being Sick and Tired, the words of Fannie Lou Hamer. Radio was, and I talked to many black radio executives, and they were looking for Sounds of Blackness to come out with another Hold On, Change Is Coming, or mm-hmm. Optimistic, you know, a happy mm-hmm. song. And it's like, no, for us to do a protest song, and I understand to their ear, it was an aberration but actually, no, we began in protest music. So, and it's always been a part of our repertoire. Mm-hmm. They just hadn't played it, and they haven't played. We got very little airplay with our past three or four releases. A song called Black Lives Matter, which we did mm-hmm. that anthem for Sister Alicia Garza, who's the co-founder of the National Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. And then we also did a song called Royalty, telling our children, we've got mm-hmm. a message from above. You ain't no thug, you're royalty, telling them about their African roots. Mm-hmm. Radio didn't play that. It was blessed with an Image Award, a nomination and all those things, but very little airplay. The same with Time for Reparations.
Today that Royalty is a song that brought her to tears. They sang it in church. And she said, because I went out to brunch with someone today, and, you know, I said, tell me something that you know from Sounds of Blackness. She's like, oh, my God, isn't Sounds of Blackness a group that sings Royalty? She looked it up. She's like, yes, this song made me cry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Just hearing that, and you can believe that, you can take this to the bank. We treasure the Grammys and things and awards you've been blessed with, but when you tell me something like that, a real life story, that means more to us and to me mm-hmm. than the does.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes. So what would you say would be a way to arrest the sort of decline that we have now in the music?
We have to reclaim ownership of the airwaves. Too many stations now are not owned, black owned, and mm-hmm. and the stations that we got support from, my sister, Sounds of Blackness, with Juneteenth Celebration. There were stations that wouldn't even play Juneteenth Celebration because they didn't want to offend white sponsors and white ownership. They didn't play Time for Reparations. They didn't play I'm Sick and Tired of Being Sick and Tired, even when George Floyd was murdered. And the stations that did were primarily the black owned stations, which are far and few between now across the country. Mm-hmm. Going back to even my favorite artist, James Brown, he knew at the time in the late 60s and 70s, he bought several radio stations because you have to control and own what mm-hmm. is yours. If you do that, then, of course, they will control the narrative. Right. But now, so many of our stations are owned by white corporate conglomerates who can control and encourage the music that is self-denigrating. But anything that's uplifting or that's socially conscious, they discourage or just don't play. So we need to get back to owning our own, repurchasing those stations, controlling the airwaves in our own neighborhoods and communities.
So, I mean, I'm going to let Taryn get in the question here, I swear.
What I want to find out, though, is that everything that's happening, all that you said, how the Sounds of Blackness stay motivated? How do you stay motivated to continue? Because I've seen in my short spin here on Earth and in the business that I am into, I've seen people my age and younger who just burn out from the constant trying to do something different or trying to stay within yourself, trying to stay authentic to what you like. But the industry and the place you're around, like what you just said about the radio stations, but not being played, to come from where you all come from, have the accolades, have the awards, and then have to face all what was happening now with a beautiful song like Juneteenth not being played at the way it should be played. How do you stay motivated to even continue?
Well, first and foremost, only by the grace of God, my brother, and by the dedication of our singers and our band, and also the support of our community. So we get a lot of support in person and online. So we get, and through stations and conscious people like Intentional Talk Radio. We can count them almost on one hand, but it can be discouraging or disappointing, but we don't just talk the walk, we walk the talk. This is who we are. So we always have done music about the movement, as we call it, and we always will. Whether or not we get airplay, whether or not we get nominations, That's much less important than us making the statement and as Spike Lee said, doing the right thing.
Right.
So do you go into schools and how are you empowering like the younger generation?
We do exactly that. In fact, I'll be teaching and mentoring 5 classes tomorrow in the summer sessions and throughout the community here. So yes, we do. Not Sounds of Blackness not only does, of course, our performances and recordings, but we do workshops. We mentor. We work in a school and we rehearse in a school called High School for Recording Arts. In fact, we jointly did that royalty song and Time for Reparations with students from High School for Recording Arts right in the heart of our community. So we work with the Seed Academy, with Harvest Prep Academy, with Friendship Academy. These are all charter schools and community centers, Sabathany Community Center, Phyllis Wheatley, names that many of your listeners might not know, but here in the Twin Cities community, they are the lifeblood of the Black community. So, like I said, we don't just talk the walk, we walk the talk, and especially as it relates to our young people.
Okay. And I'm particularly interested in young people because, you know, at some point, some people like us will not be here and they would be responsible right. for their own destiny, you know. And yeah. I don't know if they realize how destructive what they are inspiring others to sing about themselves could be. Because now you're getting things into people's psyche. Because you keep repeating these lyrics and then your mind does not know that this is not so. The things that you're saying are not so. So your mind starts to conform to whatever is being told. And that's just how mindset works. So I am wondering now if the onus really is on these singers to ensure that the quality that they or the material that they put out is actually one, wholesome, two, uplifting. But how much of it should really come from them and how much of it should be influenced by the dollar that they could make? Because I feel like based on what you're saying and based on the stations that would play it and people that were trying not to offend and all of that, their output may actually be driven by something outside of themselves.
Yes, a very true statement, my sister. But you know what? That's where commitment comes. And you know what? That commitment comes with a price and with sacrifice. But in terms of answering the first part of your question regarding where that should come from, it starts with us. There should be more than one Sounds of Blackness oriented artists to groom them and train them up. And we're not doing the job as a community that was done to us. That's why we're conscious, because we had elders that taught and groomed and oriented us. And we got that in community centers, and we even got it in churches. I'm not even seeing and hearing that so much in churches or even many community centers now or in many homes. So if they don't have that orientation, then they won't have the frame of reference to be about the movement. So it starts with us to impart it to them.
So should you, you're talking about mentorship really, but.
I'm talking about mentorship. I'm talking about orientation. I'm talking about illustrating that by example. You know, right. it was Mahatma Gandhi that said, we have to be the peace that we want to see. And so we need to be the embodiment of whatever it is that we're trying to convey. So Sounds of Blackness, we embody that Blackness, our Africanness, our consciousness, our ancestor energy. And and there need to be, we can't do it by ourselves, although that won't stop us. We'll always continue to do it. But there should be more artists that are about that because that's our tradition. It's always been a part of our tradition for right alongside the party music, and so forth, to have music about the movement. I mean, look at the Queen, Aretha Franklin. She had Dr. Feel Good and Freeway of Love, but she also had To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. You can go down the James Brown, again, I say my favorite artist. You know, he had A Cold Sweat and Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, but he also had, to me, the most important song in our history, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. So always artists needing to have that orientation that always has been a part of our legacy, but not so much now.
But okay, so that leads me to think about artists from that era who were dabbling in let's say drugs and alcohol and domestic violence and stuff like that. Those things were open. Yet you still had people who would come out and give of their very best, you know? I don't think that the sound from that era changed. They had something to mimic and they sort of stuck with it, people in that era. So whether or not someone was a bad person as an individual, his art was really not affected by it. We don't see that happening now. So we have, like, for instance, I know Colette wants to talk about Gunna and Young Thug, who have personal issues that she would like to relate to their music. I don't think it affects their music, but it affects who they are as people, and the people who are looking up to them are also looking at what they are doing. I feel like that was not really the case back in the 70s and 80s.
And let me interject too. Why? Because mm-hmm. a lot of things change around the music. The reason why a person, as you said, could have been a bad person but didn't reflect on the art is because we didn't have snapshots of who they were. We had their music to hold on to. Understand now, because of the introduction of social media, we have snapshots of people's lives.
Right.
So it's kind of intertwined. You see these younger hip-hop artists. Yeah, they talk about what they do on their personal day, like all with all the bling and all the showing offness. And yes, you hear their music, you buy their records, but you also get snapshots of them. When we talk about people like James Brown, well, I can't go so far back as James Brown, but if you go and you do your research and you listen, we don't know you. I can't tell you stories about their personal life. I can tell you the hit songs that they had. Because that's what we got from it. The radio stations was playing the hit songs. We didn't have, you had to be real in, you have to watch a documentary now to find out the ins and outs of like a Ray Charles or what is this he really went through or why, you know, stuff like that. You have to watch a documentary. No, you don't need a documentary. You see it on social media.
We know exactly what Kanye West does every day.
Exactly. So that, I think that too. So you can't say it. So what he is saying about the mentorship, I really agree with, because it's lost a little bit in the black community where you find that everybody's so quick to just go with the now and the moral compass has been cracked a little bit. And that's what we talk about all the time. The moral compass has been cracked. So, and like Colette and when we were speaking recently about the Cardi B situations and the, like what they do, how they carry about themselves. If we're being honest, like I always make the statement, don't do something your grandmother would not be proud of. And I say that knowing that they're comfortable to do stuff in front of their moms. In the black community, long time, we would go out. I'm as a boy, you go out in the streets with your partners. The things I would say and do in the street, I wouldn't say and do home. Now you go in a black home, everything they do in the street, they're doing it at home. So it's like, it's kind of crazy.
We also have to hold black radio accountable for that. Whether even being corporate owned and controlled, because it's not just the youth. We need to take a stand with that. They need to be program directors, more socially conscious as well. I'll give you an example of that again, a direct example with Sounds of Blackness as an artist. When we put out a couple of years ago after George Floyd was murdered, as I said, sick and tired of being sick and tired, and we had program directors, I had personally program directors even call and say, you know, Gary, you know, we love Sounds of Blackness. We still play your songs and all of that, but we just can't play the song because we think we're going to offend sponsors and all of that. Okay. So, of course, obviously, I disagreed with that. But I understood clearly what they were saying. But my problem beyond that was some of the same stations who were afraid of offending people with the words of Fannie Lou Hamer, sick and tired of being sick and tired about the murder of George Floyd, were not afraid of offending people by playing, excuse me, Wet Ass Pussy, which was number one at the time. And excuse me, sister, but I mean, that they're in. So we can't just put it on the kids. We've got to hold the adults that are in positions of power to do that, to have their consciousness held to accountability as well.
And so perhaps what might be required might be more of a groundswell where the messaging in terms of things that would not get played on the radio, you may need to find a way to get those things on the ground and come up so it gets demanded by radio, because there's a way to do that as well, because there's songs that we would hear, you know, buzzing in corners and so on. And Taryn can perhaps talk about that. He works on urban radio, and then songs end up on the radio. And when you look at the song on YouTube, it already has like 34 million hits. And you're like, wow, how come I didn't hear it? So, you know, it bubbles in a certain space and then it obviously comes onto the radio.
And this is the problem with programmers. As he's saying, no, programmers are the ones who are not conscious, who are not socially conscious. They're looking for numbers. What they do is they don't want to be left out. Mm-hmm. They don't want a song to hit 100 million views on YouTube, and they didn't break it. Mm-hmm. So that's why you will get the WAPs playing, the Cardi B's, and they will play, because it's like a risk-taking thing. It's like, I don't want this tune to pass me, and I can't brag and boast that I am the reason why it's big, because we played it first on W whatever. So that is what's happening. So you have to also look at that. The world has gone to a place where you hear this statement all the time from Denzel. You're either misinformed or you uninformed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the dilemma. Mm-hmm. Because the media either misinforms you or you don't really check in the email and say uninformed. So where are you going to sit on the totem pole? Mm-hmm. So it's very, very crazy. But again, we're going back to the mentorship and the swell I think that we need to have. We need to get back to the place where right is right and wrong is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we need to get back to. No, we dabble in too much gray. Everybody has a explanation as to why it is this wrong isn't that wrong. So it's like, right. I murdered him because he did so, but he's still dead.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that is where we need to kind of draw a line in the sand and say, listen, this is wrong. And that is the energy I think that we need to save our community, because we not look at what just happened in the US. I am watching all the protests going on with the verdict, the return of the Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's sad because when you really look and dig deep into it, like I'm seeing so many different specialists talking, like it's racist at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the statistics, right? The reasoning behind it, the reason why they wanted it to be overturned.
Mm-hmm.
The reasoning behind it, because there is no logical reason as to, and it's so sad, and for men on a whole to think that they have a say in what a woman wants to do with her body, because at the end of the day, if you're just putting it brass tacks and keeping it black and white, it's a woman's decision. The only time that comes into question when a woman will reach a man, like if you're in an active relationship or you're married and you already have four kids and your wife come and say, hey, I got pregnant again, we're not being careful. And that's a discussion you can have with your partner based on your living situation. The fact that, what if you carry this fetus full term and we just can't afford it? We're already struggling with four kids. We can't pay bills, things like that. So, you know, it's real. It's scary where the direction the world is going. And why I'm happy to have this conversation, because music is so important in that direction. Music molds the minds of, I remember being 13 years old and hearing my first soca song that I love. And that's the reason why I wanted to do what I'm doing. And I can hear, you hear the stories all the time. Every time, people who've been through hardships, a song could save your life in that moment. You've been through a breakup, you've been anything, a song, music saves people's lives. So it's very important. And when you look at history, black music, it's the music that really run the entire world.
That's right.
Bob Marley sang Three Little Birds, No Woman, No Cry. And it's some of these songs that you can be wherever in the world, you can be whatever skin color, you know these songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's how powerful one man in Jamaica with dreadlocks influenced the world. The most popular face in the world to Guinness Book of Records still to this date is Bob Marley. You can put him on a poster anywhere in the world and you know who it is. And he's known for what? Music.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right.
Very solid. I think we can play a little bit of Juneteenth, because I want to talk about that a little bit. So play like a verse and chorus of that, and then we'll come back and talk about Juneteenth. Juneteenth celebration. All right. So that is the latest from Sounds of Blackness. There's one called Juneteenth, and obviously done for the Juneteenth celebrations that just passed, which were on June 19th of this year and would be done every year. So my question about Juneteenth as a song is, why is it, and I'm honestly asking here, so why is it celebratory?
Because ultimately, it's about the triumph of our humanity over evil, even though it's an ongoing struggle. Of course, it's nothing new. This began in 1865. I know it's new to a lot of people. But we celebrate the triumph of African people over odds that no other people have had to experience or endure. And so even though we're still in the midst of the struggle, we celebrate with, like I say, ancestor energy, the fact that we have survived, not only have survived, but have thrived. And so that's really what we're celebrating, is our legacy, our humanity, our Africanness. And this is international, the same way it's throughout the diaspora, the same way the transatlantic slave trade was international. This is international. And so we recognize that, and we say that in the lyrics, because, Juneteenth is recognized and celebrated in South America and on the continent and in Europe. So it's focused, Afrocentric, but it's actually worldwide. But, so we celebrate all of that, even though the struggle is ongoing.
So Juneteenth is not international. Because in the Caribbean, we celebrate freedom from slavery, emancipation, as we call it, 1838. So we were free long before. Americans were still slaves when the Caribbean got freed. So, but my question really is, why is it celebratory as opposed to commemorative? And it's really, Juneteenth is brand new to Caribbean people. That's not something that's in our thing at all. So I am thinking that I know in another group that I am in, the Institute of Caribbean Studies, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C., one of the things that we're looking at is writing to Congress, not really looking at what we're doing now, because we would hate for Juneteenth to become a major sale day. And we've already seen issues with plates, like barbecue plates in the colors, you know, and with a hashtag, it's the freedom for me. No, it's not. So, you know, I'm not sure what corporate entity is behind thinking hashtag it's the freedom for me is a good slogan to go with Juneteenth. But what we would like to prevent happening is making it a major sale day, like how you have all the sales for everything else that you have a sale for, because everything has become so commercialized and everything is, you know, it's capitalism reigns supreme there. Why then, what we are doing at the Institute of Caribbean Studies is writing to Congress so that we could have it declared commemorative instead of celebratory, so that you'd have the same energy attached to like a Veterans Day. That sort of celebration. So there's still a remembrance of it, but not necessarily in the spirit of it being, you know, that kind of celebration kind of thing. So that's, if you could speak to that a little bit, I would, because I want to understand it from your perspective.
Right. Well, we as African people commemorate our existence every day in our lives, but we never get a chance to. We've been prohibited from celebrating our blackness. So it's an act of defiance. It's not just a happy celebration. It's a defiant revolutionary celebration. Or what? We've been prohibited from doing that, to celebrate our blackness, our Africanness, our Bible. And I would respectfully disagree with you, sister. I understood what you said about in the Caribbean, but we are one people, you know, that's also what we've been taught to not celebrate and to not recognize. So this is throughout the African diaspora, what affects one affects all. We've been taught otherwise. We've been taught Caribbean, European, South American, Brazil, North American. It's like, no. We declare that we are one people, and we commemorate that through how we survive every day. But even though you restrict it and try to prohibit it, no, we defiantly and in a revolutionary sense celebrate who we are, even though you think we're not worth that or that you say that we can't do that. So it's an act of defiance.
Mm, okay. So the resistance is what we want to get to the front. The resistance and the resilience is what we want to get to the fore. So if you had to find an ideal way that June 19th should be observed every year, what would that look like?
It would be multifaceted. First and foremost, an exploration, even before commemoration, an exploration and examination of our history, because we still the way that we should, which is why, again, our children, many of them, not all, but many of them don't have the orientation that they should, because we don't give that to them. So it starts with that, being a student of history. There was a song by the great Gamble and Huff called Message in Our Music. And my sister, it has one of my favorite lyrics in there. It says, understand while you dance. So what they're saying with that is, don't stop being who you are. Don't let people tell you that your Africanness and the way we dance and move and all that is less than or not worthy. Be who you are. Be proud of that. Be defiant with it. But have your consciousness and understanding why you dance. Too often they want to make it just academic, and that no, don't do what African people do. No, don't sing. Don't dance. Don't do that. Just study. So, well, no, it's got to be multifaceted. And not at the cost of, we don't do it like Europeans. So that's why I say we celebrate and commemorate in our own way. If we ever stop doing that, then they have truly won and we have lost.
Well, Pan-Africanism is a movement that really captivated the entire diaspora. That I could say for sure, Pan-Africanism. So you do see the same colors that are attached to Juneteenth. It's the Pan-African flag. It's the red, black, and green. So I have a friend who is actually very into Pan-Africanism stuff. And that's Shuja, Jersey Jab Terran. And he has, every carnival he goes to, he has that red, black, and green flag. So people come up to him and ask him, you know, what is the symbolism of this flag? Because he would go to events where there'd be people waving flags and that would be his flag. And for him, he's had this sort of like one-man army approach to talking to foreigners about Pan-Africanism in this time. Because it's not as cool anymore, if you know what I mean. You don't see people coming out talking about it. You know, the Black Panther movement isn't like it was back then and so on. But the energy and the reason that it started in the first case still does exist. And so what I think needs to happen is people, as you're saying, we need to embody it. So we need to embody it, but we need to share it as well. And that may have an outward manifestation of having things in the colors, whether it's a t-shirt, a flag or whatever. So people recognize this is what I identify with and it's not just on Juneteenth. You see what I mean? So that it gives it some longevity. And it gives it legs, because what we need is for little children to understand what happened. Because I can bet you that it's not going to be taught in schools the way that we would like for it to be taught. So the only way to do it is to constantly be in a space of, hey, I need you to understand what Juneteenth is about.
Yes, absolutely. And we drive that home in with the song as well, that when we say celebrate, that this is the spirit and essence of Juneteenth is 365 days a year.
Now, it should be.
That's what we're after. You know, in fact, we even told radio that, you know, as we introduce it to them, it's like this is not just for June 19th. This is a Juneteenth anthem for all year long, because the struggle is ongoing. The commemoration, the recognition can be on that one day, the focus, but the effort needs to be every day, 365, because we're Black 365.
I still want to go back a little bit to the Caribbean and how we celebrate emancipation. And mm-hmm. while a lot of us are happy, you know, to do it on August 1st, it kind of stays there as well. And there'd be instances where you would wear like African clothing or whatever, but generally on August 1st, all across the Caribbean, everybody's wearing something African looking. And we celebrated Juneteenth during Caribbean American Heritage Month. So we did have some virtual calls and so on. And I was keen to wear a dashiki. So that as soon as you looked at me, you're like, ah, that's an African print, you know. But it didn't have the same, resonance for me. Because in my mind, it is still a remote concept. And that's why I was asking you to explain it. Because like I said, I want to understand it from your perspective. Because for me to be able to empathize with you, I have to understand it from how you think about it. So I understand your perspective now. And, you know, it's something that I can talk about. Because, yes, you know the history and you read it or whatever. But when you read something, it's completely different from if someone tells you, well, this is my experience and this is why I think we should be doing it. So that's why I was a little persistent in asking those questions and wanting to understand it from
I love that, my queen. Actually, yes, bring it on. That's, you know, if that ever doesn't happen, we always want to keep it 100. And right. and this is the kind of heart-to-heart that people can descend need to have on an ongoing basis.
Right. Okay. So since we're here, tell me now how you feel about reparations, because you have a song about reparations. Yeah. So tell me how you think reparations should play out, because I struggle a little bit with reparations. Okay. So tell me.
I think actually very simply, and there are fortunately books now by us, you know, that document everything in terms of American descendants of slavery or African descendants of slavery, excuse me, ADOS. But there's the documentation is there and tracing, you know, the documents are there. There's the formula is there to go with the documents. It's just that, you know, I learned a long time ago, the expression from desire comes all things. Mm-hmm. And what's not there across the board is the desire for it to happen. In fact, what is there in the quarters of those that control the power is for it not to happen and to complicate it and to deflect from the essence and the simplicity of it to try to complicate it, anything to keep it from happening, which they've always done with every aspect of our movement for social justice, whether it was liberation, whether it was anti-lynching, whether it was Jim Crow, always the deflection and the discussion about how complicated it was and we'll never figure this out, that there's no way, when the exact opposite is the truth.
I struggle with reparations just because I think we are asking for, I don't know if that money exists and is sitting someplace. One, if it is, then how do we, and you say there's a structure with how it's to be paid out and whatever. That is the part I think that is problematic in my head and understanding how every person who is a descendant of the system of slavery is to be awarded and rewarded for having gone through that trauma. I don't think that is explicitly clear.
Okay. Well, it can and it should be, because first of all, and respectfully, sister, I have to correct something. We're not asking for anything. We're owed this money. Okay. We are owed.
We owed it, but we're asking for it because it's not being given to us. So we have these reparations committees and this and that. So it's not, you know, yes, we might be owed it, but we have to ask for it at this point, and that's what's happening.
Okay. We're using the phrase in different meanings kind of thing.
Okay.
Right. It's not about, we shouldn't have.
We're not begging. Right. We're asking for it. Right.
Right. You know, so. Essentially 3 centuries of free labor, and another century of essentially of free labor, building this nation, building physically and economically off the backs of our foreparents, and not only this nation, but enriching Europe. And I understand in Germany, reparations have already started they didn't find it that complicated. So, you know,
there's a model we can follow.
Yeah. Yes, there is. And we choose, when I say we, America, let me make it clear, chooses to complicate it because that's how they address anything that has to do with our equality and justice.
I wouldn't stick on just America because the Caribbean region is having a tough time with it too. There's a reparations committee that is set up across CARICOM. And that's like 13 countries, you know, and it's still not where it needs to be, but right. There are people meeting about it and talking about it and it's in the public domain. However, nobody is saying, okay guys, we have this X amount of billion. Let's divide it now. That's not happening. That's not happening at all. So that's why I'm saying I really don't think that it is clear, you know. So that's okay. But I'm happy with the social justice movement that is Sounds of Blackness because I agree. We need to have a theme underlying and underpinning what we're doing. As Terrence said, you know, music is what keeps us going. Music is what defines periods of our lives and so on. And as we say in Calypso, the musicians are, well, Calypsonians really are storytellers. So they are able to pinpoint something happening at a specific time and there's a recording of it. So years from now, when it's not written in a Chantwell sort of way, we actually know what happened, you know, years ago.
We're living it now. Most of everything started. We're just talking about slavery, right? And it started with a melody there, you know. Somebody had a melody back then and that melody went forward and it went forward and it turned into different genres. The melody scheme from the backs of, as he just said, is somebody in a painful moment, God would have sent them a melody and they would have hummed it. In humming it, somebody would have taken that hum and turned it into words. Somebody would have taken those words and turned it into something bigger. And then we saw everything that spawned out of that. Jazz came from it. And, R&B is way newer.
R&B's still new, yes.
It's like, it's
so all
started,
these Negro spirituals.
And, right. It started there. So that's why I honestly believe that when I say music is really a healing tool. And we have seen it. Some people don't believe it. I've seen stories, documentaries where people who suffer the worst in terms of health and was in hospital and everybody count them out. They're not going to live. And one person decided to play a song to them every day and people came out of comas because of hearing music.
Yes.
Many miracles have happened through song. That's why church singers are so powerful. It's not by chance.
Yes, definitely healing in music, my brother and sister, and particularly in African-based music. Music has been our therapy, our lifeblood, well before, of course, the transatlantic slave trade, but since that, and something you touched on a second ago, brother, is the reason if you listen carefully to Time for Reparations, you'll hear the melody of Wade in the Water, the old spiritual, which also had. So that's the subtext, and not to get too deep, but just so people understand, we don't, as Sounds of Blackness and students of African and African-American history, we don't do anything by happenstance.
Right.
Wade in the Water melody is there because Wade in the Water was one of the many spirituals and work songs that had double meaning. It had a spiritual meaning, of course, about baptism and wading in the water, but it also meant sung across fields from plantation to plantation to tell a runaway to go to water to throw off the scent of the dogs. So, you know, and so, and wait and what God's going to trouble the water. God is troubling the water, through our cry and demand for reparations. So, we use that melody, very deliberately and very historically. And so we're serious about that.
Okay. All right, so as we prepare to wrap up, I want to ask you two things. One, is there a formula that you have that you think has led you to the three Grammys that you have? Because there are people who've been around and have always been nominated and haven't won. So is there a formula that you think you have? And secondly, what's next for Sounds of Blackness?
Okay, two more great questions, my queen. Formula? I don't think so for us. Sounds of Blackness, our formula, our, you know, we, two things about that quickly. there was a great country artist, Chet Atkins, who was also a great songwriter, and he was often asked in his interviews how he wrote such great songs. I love what he said, and I believe what he said. His answer was, there are no songwriters. All music is given, and I believe that as well. And especially we're you know, it's God inspired, but also our ancestors hum those melodies. Our ancestors are our muse, ancestor energy, I like to call it. And so we hear the voices, not only of Kizzy and Kunta Kinte, but of Fannie Lou Hamer and all that, whispering to it. If we listen, if we attune to it, even though centuries removed from the African continent, we still hear the melodies and rhythms and feel, of Africa, because we're an African people, if we allow ourselves to. So that's the motivation and foundation for Sounds of Blackness.
Okay. And what's next for you, you think?
Oh, yeah, that's
what
right.
What can that we was expect?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. We are going to be releasing another couple of singles. One written by our brilliant choreographer, Sister Carrie Harrington, who somebody's from New Jersey. She's a native of New Jersey as well, of Princeton. And she's one of our soloists and gifted writer. She has a song called Hold Up Your Light.
Okay.
So, yep. And so that will be coming this summer. And right after that, into the fall, another of our gifted writers, Jamecia Bennett, has a song called You're Gonna Win. So again, Sounds of Blackness uniqueness is to encourage our people through the music of our history and our culture.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. We were incredibly blessed to have been, you know, gifted the opportunity to speak to you. So congratulations on all your success, and thank you for the work that you continue to do. Thank you for all of the toiling that you continue to do in the fields, because, you know, we understand that it's not easy. So thank you for staying the course, and we wish you continued success as you go through to close out Black Music Month. And thank you for being with us on Everyday Lessons Now.
Thank you. Sounds of Blackness.
All right. Thank you.
We will close out the show with more from Sounds of Blackness. This has been great with Gary Hines, who is the musical director for Sounds of Blackness. And they've got new music coming out, so we will be bringing that to you right here on ITRNradio.com. You can get this broadcast and all of the other broadcasts on all of your favorite podcasts. Get Sounds of Blackness. Powerful.